time. That's all we need.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Tigers Down Under, our first podcast for 2024. I'm your host, Alex, and with me I have Dan. How are you, Dan?
Oh, yeah, I'm all right. I'm enjoying my my Christmas holidays. Not enjoying the football as much as I probably would have liked over the last couple of games. Very frustrating for very different reasons. Two games involving red cards, so that's very exciting, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, it was a mixed bag,
wasn't it?
And both
red cards are probably actually, you know, a little bit dubious.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we can talk the Blackburn game first, but yeah, certainly Tufan makes the most of it, shall we say, to get, was it Higham sent off in that one? But I think it's both Blackburn games actually where we've sort of benefited from the red card. In this case, we're already leading 3-2 when the red card occurs. But I'm sure Blackburn, I mean, as this podcast is titled Blackburn Bunnies, we seem to have quite a good record against them recently.
Yeah, it was certainly an interesting game. I think we came out really, really strongly and asserted some dominance and, you know, took a nice early lead. And then it's another one of those ones where we sort of gave it away or risked giving it away before, because I think we went in it 2-0, didn't we?
Yeah, that's it. And I think we were sort of saying last week that this is a game that we should have approached in the same way that we did against Cardiff, which it certainly felt like it. I mean, going 2-0 up as early as we did, brilliant goals from Delap and Connolly, but then pegged back at halftime to be 2-2, felt as if it was the sort of game we were going to, sort of similar to the Bristol City game, drop in that second half. So to come away with the 3 points, Jones getting his goal, you know, I think Rossini called it our most important win of the season. And it felt like at the time, it felt like, you know, it was kind of setting us up for a really positive run of momentum. We'll talk Chef Wednesday after this one, but, you know, obviously that wasn't to be.
Yeah, it certainly was a nice way to finish the 2023. You know, we got the win, got the 3 points, finished in the top six. It did feel like a very positive end to 2023. And I think, you know, in a lot of respects, it was a really good performance with lots of players, you know, showing their worth and showing their value. But, you know, a couple of just silly mistakes, really, again. Where, you know, we copped two pretty cheap goals. I think the first one, I they tried to play the offside trap on Smodic, didn't work, and they were, you know, 5 yards off him the whole way. They gave him a head start. And I think it's Jones maybe just sort of tries to stick a leg out and just try and grab that ball at the last minute, misses it. You know, Smodic is ahead, gets the bounce, and has a couple of bites at it still before he puts it away. But, and I think that was really, you know, they're the moments where you just have to get it right. And I think that 50-50 sort of lunging reach in that moment probably wasn't the best one or best decision. I think it sort of put, you know, him out of that chase a little bit. But, the second goal was again just a bit of faffing around in the wrong part of the park, trying to play some silly passes. We sort of win it and we turn it over, and we win it and we turn it over, and then it goes in the box and they score. So I don't know, it's the same sort of stuff. We play really, really well, really good football for long periods of the game, and then we switch off and we let teams back in. And I think that's probably the big frustration at the moment, because it's been the same, you know. And I mean, lots of people, we talk about, you know, Rosinha's post-match, you know, press conferences, and, you know, him being a, you know, a bit of a broken record and just sort of strutting out, walking out the same line every week. But it's kind of true. The things that he says are true. You know, we play a lot of really good football, and we're working on the style of play, but the same way, we're not really in the grand scheme of things, learning from the mistakes that we are making. And so it's the same sorts of things that are popping up, you know, every other week, that are killing us, in the sense that they're stopping us from really cementing a place, you know, in that top six. You know, at the moment, it looks pretty clear that four of the six spots are, you know, all but locked up. Like three and four are attainable, but I think, you know, that they look like they're pretty, you know, performing at a level where it's pretty certain they'll be there, which leaves two spots for the remaining probably six teams that are chasing. And I think the patchy form that we are showing, and that's within games and across games, I think is a little concerning. I'm still optimistic and I'm still hopeful. And I think, you know, if we still finish, you know, there or thereabouts, it's still going to be a great season. But developing that a little bit more consistency in the back half of the season, and I think that's going to be really challenging. With, you know, we lose a couple of really important players to AFCON. You know, we don't know exactly what Philogene's going to be like when he comes back from his injury. We've got a transfer window to deal with, so that's going to be some outgoings, some incomings, betting new players.
I was just going to say,
squad.
Tigers on top saying in the chat that this January window is going to be a make or break for us with how we sort of lost momentum. It's probably more a comment with the Chef Wednesday game, making it the three losses, the three wins in seven, I should say. But even with this Blackburn game, as you say, I mean, it's those same old issues that we're having with conceding the goals. Do you feel as if it's a personnel issue? I mean, I think, you know, we've seen Ingram come into goal. Everyone was sort of criticising Allsop, and then he's been injured. So Ingram's come into goal, and now we're sort of criticising Ingram, and not us, but, you know, the supporter base. It feels as if there's this issue with the number of goals that we're conceding. I don't know, you know, we're sort of expecting to see a new left back probably come into the club in the next week or so to give us a fit option there, because we've had Vinagre out for most of the season. But I don't know. Does it seem as if it's something that we can fix with personnel? Is it a style issue, a structure thing, or what is it?
I certainly think that getting a good left back who's fit and durable and everything in and into the squad is certainly going to help. I don't think that one position is our entire undoing, because, I mean, you look at the Blackburn game, I mean, neither goals came down that side. One came through the middle and one was lost on the, you know, sort of right-hand side of the box. So I don't really, but I think it will certainly help in you know, just in that sense of, you know, a natural left back playing left back is going to just be better than, you know, either a centre back playing left back or a centre mid playing left back or whatever. You know, there's, I think it's hard to compete at the top level wherever you are if you've got, you know, square pegs round holes, and they're doing a job, and that's, you know, I'm not trying to bash Greaves or Slater, you know, they've done, or even Coyle, who shifted across at times. You know, I think they've done a solid job in that position. But I think really moving forward to try and, you know, progress the team, I think we need someone who's not just going to be solid. We need someone who's going to, you know, really, really shine in that position. Because I think we've seen over the last few seasons, you know, lots of Elder had his, you know, doubters, and he had his fans, and, you know, the same with Fleming. But we've seen, you know, someone who knows that position, when they play well, how impactful they can be. And I think that's sort of something that's been a little bit missing this season as a whole. But I don't think that personnel in and of itself is going to be the solution to our problems. I think it's just what I imagine the cycle of being a professional footballer is. You know, they played the game, they go back, they do the analysis, they look at the mistakes they made, and they go this and work on, you know, that process of how to fix them. I think the issue is that, you know, also typical of football, none of these moments where we're saying, like, you know, they're making mistakes, it's just these moments that are costing us. No, all of these moments are unique moments, and that's the issue. It's hard, and, you know, you do things that help to prepare you, but every moment is unique. Every flight of the ball, every bounce of the ball, every challenge with a player is a unique experience. So it's hard to really, in a sense, difficult to really prepare fully for those moments. But yeah, don't know. Hopefully we get better.
Someone that's certainly been getting better, it almost seems, week on week, is Liam Delap. Great solo goal for the first It seems as if he only really has one speed to shoot at. It's just, you know, sort of full bore, because he had that shot in the second half that I think probably cleared the roof of the MKM with how high he hit it. But with this one, at least, I mean, like, it was a great finish beneath the keeper, beating a couple of men as he's sort of become his trademark. And Connolly as well, I thought, was a really efficient finish, sort of through the legs of one of the Blackburn defenders and placing it into that far corner. Two great finishes from strikers who are really at the top of their game at the moment.
Yeah, Delap, you know, the trademark, the burst into the box, and, you know, the cutting to and fro and sending defenders the wrong way. And I actually thought, you know, once he got to that position, I was sort of thought he was half holding it up, half waiting for, you know, to cut it sort of along that towards the 6 yard line for Connolly or someone at the back post to be running, coming in for a tap in. So I didn't really expect him to shoot, but he did, and he, you know, sort of finished with aplomb. It was a good, really, really good goal. I think that took him to 7 as well. So we got 2 on 7 and 1 on Connolly on 8 now.
Yeah.
His goal was his 8. So, you know, I think it's good that we've got that. You know, that all our forwards are sort of sharing the goals around. It shows that, despite all of the talk and the impact of Philogene, that, you know, we aren't a one-man team and we have never really been a one-man team. It's just that he had the, you know, the star power. You know, he's the big money signing down from the Premier League. But I think, there's Delap's, you know, growing week on week, as we've sort of been saying. And I think starting to... I think I said a couple of weeks ago that it's just that final piece of decision-making. You know, sometimes it's taking that touch too many, that, you know, not releasing early enough when he's on those drives. But I think he's starting, you know, over the last couple of games, made a couple of really good decisions. Got a really nice goal. Got an early break in the other game. But I think that was more just, it's been a pretty heavy run. And it was a game where it was, once we went a couple down, we weren't ever really... going to do anything about. But anywho, and Connolly as well, I think a really good finish, sort of tough one with the bounce and the two defenders sort of on him. But, yeah, did really well to put that in the bottom corner. Had another opportunity later in the game where just couldn't quite get the shot away, kept trying to make space, but just couldn't quite get it to happen. And then I think Traore puts a really nice ball to Toufan at the back post, who almost replicated Delap's goal, but just pinged just wide of the post, unfortunately. But I think there's been, you know, it was overall was, you know, quite a positive game, good end to the year. And I'm not sure exactly why Seri. I'm skipping ahead of myself. I was thinking of the Wednesday game with Seri unavailable but Traore available, and I was very, very confused by that. But anyway, game. That's pretty good. We won.
All good. I was just going to say, so Tigers on top, saying, kind of going back to our discussion around the left back, that's sort of the root of the issue with it meaning the left wing can't get forward. It does seem, I don't know if you listen to the 1904 Club, which is the podcast done by David Burns, Baz Cooper, Fletch and David Pruden. It seemed on that Baz was talking about the fact that a left back is pretty imminently joining the club in the next week or so. So hopefully that does get to the bottom of that issue. But I might go to you now for your votes on this game.
Okay, so I went 3-2-1, Delap, Connolly, and Traore.
Oh, very nice. Okay, we've got a little bit of a difference. I got Delap. What was it? Delap, Connolly, Traore, sorry. All right, yeah, so we have gone quite different. So I've gone Jones for the 3 because, I think he technically gets credited the assist for Delap's goal, so I'm giving him a goal and an assist for the game. Scoring the winner, I think, gives him a bit of a boost in my book. So I've gone him for the 3. I went Delap for the 2, and I went Toufan for the 1. I thought Toufan had a good game. Mm-hmm. We sort of alluded to it at the start, you know, did a good job being getting the man sent off, which all but ended the game as a contest in our favour. And, you know, we'll talk in a second about when red cards go against us. So it's only fair that we also enjoy them when they go for us. But, I thought it was a reasonable display from him in that one. Yeah, we'll talk Chef Wednesday now, where we did have a couple of changes with McLaughlin and Laquilo coming in for Traore and Seri. Yeah, I think as Tigers on Top says here, I'll bring it up. So apparently the story is that Seri didn't have permission from the Ivory Coast, so we would have been, you know, fined by FIFA or anything like that if we had played him. I think we did get permission for Traore, but for one reason or another, I suppose also once we had the red card, Rossini just didn't want to risk him and throw him on needlessly in that sense. But it was one of those games where it really highlights the absence of Seri and what he does bring to the team. And we've said before when it comes to someone like a Slater, but those players in that sort of central midfield role where it's sometimes, you know, you sort of overlook the impact of their performance on the team, where you sort of say, oh, they're just passing the ball sideways or they're just recovering the ball. It's actually still quite a valuable role in the side. With Seri out of the side and even at 11 men, it did seem as if it was a bit of a weaker performance from City before we even get to the red card.
Yeah, I think certainly we started, pretty shaky. And you're absolutely right that in that midfield area, we just couldn't really retain possession. We couldn't really, get that the passing and the movement off the ball. Just couldn't quite get it happening. But yeah, I think it was a really, really frustrating game. Without even, not even talking about Morton's the red card and that decision. Just, I think after, we started so well, we played a lot of really good football against Blackburn, and then to come here and just to start off so poorly, I said a minute ago, we're not really a one-man team. Maybe Seri is the one man that makes the team, because, he wasn't there, and it had a huge, a huge impact on the way that we played and approached that this game. So that was really disappointing. I thought it was good to see McLaughlin back in. I think he sort of had a typical McLaughlin performance, where he had a couple of really good moments, a couple of really great sliding challenges and sliding blocks, but then also a couple of less ideal moments where I think he's very easily beaten for a few headers in the box and things like that. But which is ironic when I think he was supposed to bring some height into the defense or something. So, I think it was just so frustrating. And I think it was one where I kind of switched off. I was watching it, but by the time we got to halftime, it was 50% or less that I was watching, I was watching and giving my full attention, because I think it's one of those games where the red card, what should have been a really exciting, interesting game, the red card really sapped all of the life and interest out of the game. And it wasn't a red card. I don't care what I don't care what the refs, what they say. And I don't believe it's a red card. I think it should get overturned. But from the beginning, I have not believed that they will overturn it. So we'll see what happens there.
I think the key for me with it as well is how early it is. And I know a red card in the first minute should be the same as a red card in the 90th and all of that. But I think I saw an interview with Greaves after the game where I think he went a little bit too far in his comments. But one that I quite agreed with was, you see the ref sort of hesitating when he sees the challenge go in. He sort of looks as if he's sort of walking towards it, and then the Chef Wednesday players surround him, which, it's an issue in itself. They should be being booked for that given the new rules, but he doesn't book them. But they surround him and he then brandishes the red card. And I think if there's any doubt in his mind, if there's any uncertainty, I think the fact that the game is so early should be playing into his mind a little bit more than it does, in terms of how quick he is to give that red card, certain he is to give that red card. I agree with you as well that I think it should be overturned. I think I've seen the arguments that it's a reckless challenge, that he goes in, sort of studs up on the player. And I can understand to an extent that argument, because I know that in the laws of the game, it doesn't even talk about contact with the player, that it's strictly, it's sort of, you know, you can have red cardable offenses where there's no contact with the other player. Mm. If you're sort of jumping in two-footed, that sort of thing, I don't think it's as bad as that. So I don't necessarily see that argument holding up. I also think it's always interesting when you consider that when they're judging whether a tackle is a penalty or not, you only need the smallest nick on the ball for it to not be a penalty, because, oh, he's taken the ball first, it's not a penalty. But when you have a foul outside the box, you can completely cleanly take the ball, as Morton did, and it's a straight red card. And I'm like, does that mean that if that tackle happens in the box, that's a penalty? Because I'd be very, very surprised to see that given as a penalty when he's cleanly won the ball. I could understand it being a yellow card in the sense that it's a really robust challenge, and sort of the ref sort of saying to, because I've certainly had it before in football where I've gone in quite hard and won the ball, where the ref said to me, you're lucky you've taken the ball, because if you hadn't, that's a red card, but you've taken the ball, so here's, you know, it's a yellow card sort of thing, and be careful sort of thing. But I think it's a yellow, like, you know, nothing more. And I've seen people saying it's not even a foul. So it's one where I don't know what's going to come of the appeal. I think you're right. I think in all likelihood they're not going to overturn it, because they'll say, well, from the ref's angle, it's a red. I mean, we were sort of talking before the podcast. Mm. It's sort of a funny argument, because I don't think there's a red that gets given in football where it doesn't look like a red from the ref's angle. That's the whole point. So for appeals to work, it's to say, well, there's other angles that show it's not a red. If there's other angles that show this isn't a red, which there are, I think it should be overturned. But, yeah, I don't have too much confidence.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that worry it for me. Now, I 100% agree. I think he goes to ground I don't necessarily even think, at first I thought it was, you know, they'd say it's reckless, but when I watched it again and I watched the highlights and I watched the tackle again, I thought it's not even that reckless. He goes down and he takes the ball with one foot, and his second foot just slides through behind. He doesn't have straight legs. He doesn't have anything that actually indicates a really dangerous thing, except that after he makes contact with the ball, his foot rolls over the top of it.
Yeah.
That might be the only thing where they will say foot went over the ball, you know, reckless thing or whatever. But it was so slow and controlled. And I hate the fact that, you know, the Sheffield Wednesday player rolls around, acts as if he's dying, then gets up and walks away and is fine, basically as soon as Morton's been sent from the field.
Because Morton hasn't actually touched him. That's the other part of it.
I think there's a slight contact with his second foot. But I was going to say
maybe it's a trailing foot, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not like, but there's no force in it. It's more like, you know.
What it always reminds me of is you see the footage occasionally brought out is Harry Maguire taking out the two QPR players in the same tackle years ago, and everyone goes, what an amazing tackle, what a brilliant tackle, how good's that? He's taken the And I'm like, every time I look at that tackle, I'm like, these days or in other circumstances, that's given as a foul because he's taken the player out. And it's the same sort of argument where I'm like, that's essentially what Morton's doing here, where it's an industrial tackle where he's taken the player out with the follow through, where it's like, well, sure, but if he's won the ball first, I completely get that that's not necessarily how the laws work, and that if you follow through and take the player out, it can still be a foul. But it's also the way the game is officiated in a common sense that's usually applied, where if you were to go strictly by the letter of the law and you say, well, there's studs that go over the ball, therefore it's reckless, therefore it's a red, I feel like there'd be a lot more red cards that we'd see in football if that was consistently applied. And I think that's where you usually see common sense come into it. And you say, well, yes, you know, the studs go onto the ball and over it. It's dangerous, maybe is the word for it, but because he's controlled it and, you know, he hasn't made contact with the player, it's only a yellow card. But I think it's because there's an argument to be made, and I think because it's close enough to being seen as a red, and like we've, you know, Tigers on top in the chat is also saying he thinks it's a red. So because I think that there's that argument to be made, I think it's going to be hard to see it overturned. But all we can do is try, I suppose.
Yeah, well, we'll hear soon enough about that, but I'm assuming we won't have Morton available for FA Cup on the weekend.
Well, actually, that's an interesting one as well. I don't know how, because I think those bans don't apply to FA Cup anymore. So obviously, that would count as one of his games, and we'd only miss him for two league games. So I think in a way it actually means that he might be available and likely plays in the FA Cup rather than the league. But it does certainly limit our options for who would come in for him. Maybe we can...
didn't realize it because I always thought it was like any like cups or like competitions that are officiated or like run by the same league or like thing where like these are all like football FA competitions that things carried over because otherwise like if in theory you got a suspension in an FA Cup game and you guys lost
you have
that
to wait
thing
for the next,
then,
yeah
then you wouldn't
take but I think the reason that they've done it because I suspect it was being gamed a bit where people who had, say, 9 yellow cards and they were one game away from a suspension, week before the cup game, you get your 10th yellow card. So you miss the cup game, you don't miss the league game, and it sort of clears you out for the league. I think that was the reasoning.
Yeah, right.
But, yeah, look, it's as you say, it's kind of silly then. Like you could get a red card in the FA Cup that you don't serve until the next season. It's a bit funny, but well, look, I mean, the other element to this game is, you know, coming out from half time, we made a couple of subs. Doherty came on straight after the red card, but then we also saw McLaughlin go off and also Connolly. We saw, who was it who came on at half time? I think it was Christie and was it Ali that came on at half time or was he a bit later?
I mean,
he might have been on 60 for Delap, but yeah, so we shifted the shape a little bit as well. I think Delap is pretty frustrated when he was taken off. You sort of talked earlier about the fact that clearly we were sort of preserving players or giving them a bit of a rest once the game looked lost. Mm. But as a caller, I thought Ali looked pretty positive when he came on and hopefully sort of back to full fitness and can feature more heavily in the next few games.
Yeah, I think his couple of cameos off the bench, you know, recently he's actually been quite bright. Which I don't know whether that means that he's there's still plans that he's still going to be around. I mean, I guess, you know, if he's playing, it bodes a little bit well for him. I think the thing will be like, you know, something, you know, FA Cup game, that's probably the perfect opportunity to say, here's your opportunity for, you know, for 60 minutes or whatever he's capable of. Show us what you can do. You know, prove that you are worth keeping around for the rest of the season. Because I think when he's on, he certainly has something about him. I think he actually looked these couple of little bits, especially against Sheffield with 10 men, you know, looked quite bright and looked a lot smarter and than he did, you know, 12 months ago. So interesting to see, how that all plays out. But
It was Twine who came on at halftime. I've just remembered. Yeah, for Twine for Connolly, which I think was probably the right decision because I think Twine has a bit more energy and pressing intensity about him. And, you know, it was Twine that converted the penalty that Ali won. You know, penalties are penalties. There's not, you know, they go in. It's, you know, nothing special. But I thought it was a pretty well taken penalty into the side netting. You sort of look back on, you know, obviously Philogene missed his penalty when he got the chance. So it's a bit of confidence for Twine as well. I think that's 4 goals for the season now, which is great for him. You know, it gives us something to cheer about on the trip. And I guess we'll see how, you know, Twine's probably going to come more into the fold in the coming league games now that we're sort of bereft of options in central midfield.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's sort of one of those things where, you know, now that we're going to be down 2 for AFCON, that it just creates opportunities for others, and others will just have to stand up, you know, and show what they can do. So it'll be interesting to see certainly how Seri is replaced and what that looks like. You know, it certainly opens the door for Slater, Doherty, Twine to really stake a claim again, and whether And I guess, you know, with Traore, he's sort of a bit in and out. He's not necessarily a locked-on starter, but, you know, in that either the wing or in that sort of you know, attacking midfield position, I guess, yeah, Twine, or maybe you've got Tufan or something down the wing to fill that. But it's opportunities for someone to step in, and that also means, you know, players who then shift either, you know, come onto the bench as well, young lads, or you know, Vaughan or someone like that. It's their opportunity to go, cool, I'm getting my 20-minute cameo. I need to make something happen. I need to, you know, show my value. So it is frustrating to, you know, and I wish them both luck in Carbon Nations. I hope they have a good time. I hope they come back healthy. But it's an opportunity for the rest of the players in the squad to show their worth. And I think it's going to be a good chat, you know, it's going to be a challenge, but I think it'll be a good challenge to play, to figure out how to play without Sarri, because
he's not getting any younger. We're going to have to figure it out at some point.
Yeah. So at some point that's going to have to happen. And I don't know, maybe we end up just dipping into the transfer market and getting a younger version of Sarri anyway, who, you know, as part of a succession plan, but who knows?
I think we've tried that a few times already now, because we've got Simon's out on loan was sort of the first plan as the succession. And then I suppose Morton in the world where we can somehow pry him out of Liverpool on a permanent could have been another one.
That's fine. We just need Liverpool to go out and spend another $50 million on a centre mid like right now in January and just push him one further spot further down the pecking order, and maybe we can convince him.
I think they are linked to my mind has gone blank on the mid at Fulham, who I think almost went to Bayern in the summer. So if they signed him, perhaps that would bode well for us. We'll talk quickly transfers in a second. We'll do our votes first for this game, and then we'll preview the Birmingham game. I had to give the four votes. I'll give the three votes to Ali. In this one, I probably would give him four votes if I could. I don't think too many others really deserved votes out of this one. I thought he was really bright when he came on, and really impressed me, because I feel like we haven't seen the best of him for a little while. So that was great to see. I've actually gone McLaughlin for the two votes. I thought he was quite bright when he was on the pitch in the first half. And I think, you know, it's kind of telling that we held out with 10 men with him at centre-back, and then when he went off, we shipped two goals quite quickly in the second half. And then Twine for the one, converting the penalty, you know, looked as bright as you can be in a 10-man side, trying to hold up any sort of attacking plays in the side. So, yeah, he got my one vote.
So, interestingly enough, we have exactly the same for this game. We've gone same players, same order. And I wrote two of my three down before. Well, actually, I wrote all three down before we started. My Twine was the one I wasn't sure of, and I decided about 30 seconds before we went to air. So Ali, I think, seemed to be, I mean, one created the penalty, but seemed to be, you know, was effective in a team that, you know, was a man down. You know, so I think, you know, deservedly got the three. And again, I think, as you, I thought McLaughlin was pretty good. Not flawless, but I think, certainly showed his value, and I think it was just a circumstance of the red card and a sort of a shift in shape and, shift in sort of approach at half time. But I'm not entirely sure sort of why, like, realistically, we would have probably been better off just parking the bus and stacking it up with as many bodies behind the ball as possible, instead of what seemed to be, we're going to go for it and try and jag a goal, and then we'll try and hold on to that.
I think Rossini has been watching too many videos of Ange after that Spurs-Chelsea game, where Ange said similar, where he sort of said, I'm not going to change my sub, I'm just going to go for it. And I think Rossini said after the game he thought he'd go for it at halftime and make some attacking changes, which, you know, he'll learn from. I mean, I sometimes feel like when you go down a man, if you do sit the men behind the ball, it's just a matter of when, not if, they're going to score. And you do think if you can actually get a goal and then you've got something to defend, it's a little bit better. But it's sort of damned if he does, damned if he doesn't, I suppose. If we still lose that game, you kind of go, well, we didn't even try. But
I would just think, you know how damaging Delap can be on the counter, and we know how damaging even Ali could be on the counter with pace. So really just, you know, locking it up a bit and just going, unfortunately, mate, we're just going to be playing, feeding you long balls, and you're going to get, you know, doubled up on. Do your best, we'll try and support you. And just, I think that potentially would have been, you know, a better way to, I mean, a different way. I don't know if it would have been better. It's all conjecture now and all. Doesn't really matter. It's done. we lost.
Well, we'll talk transfer news just quickly. A few links that have emerged. Obviously, we already talked a little bit about the left back, unnamed left back, who seemingly we're looking to bring in reasonably quickly. It sounds as if Vinagre would be on his way back to Sporting in that case, given the wages and the loan fee that we paid for him. I think we're looking to cut our losses on that one. Manuel Benson from Burnley. Apparently, there's a verbal agreement with Burnley, but then it's down to the player, and I think it sounds as if he's looking to see what his options are, sort of waiting to see what interest emerges. So that means he's probably not in a rush to sign, which does mean that, you know, presumably we'll have other options like Ryan Kent, who's handed in a transfer request in Turkey as well. And is it Aruri, the other Burnley winger, I think we've also shown an interest in. So the interesting point, Matt, I suppose, that if we're trying to convince one of the Burnley players to come and join us, at least we've got Twine here already who can hopefully put in a good word for us. But, you know, looking at Benson in particular, 11 goals last season for Burnley in the side that cruised to promotion, he's the sort of attacking option that you'd like to see join the club.
Yeah, I think it seems to be that sort of the positions we've been talking about, that, you know, left back, another winger, are sort of the ones that are looking to be filled. I think certainly, Benson looks like, if we could pry him down, probably the perfect sort of player, one that we know performs at this level, has been part of a, you know, promotion winning side, and one that unfortunately is not getting a lot of game time with Burnley in the Premier League this season. So if it all comes together, I think that potential has the potential to be a great signing, but I think, it's interesting. I don't really know. I think that's probably my preference of the three options. And then I'm intrigued to see who or where this left back comes from, who they are. But I think that's, I think, you know, as sort of we said, and Tigers on Top said, that left back is a priority. So hopefully that's, they're coming in very soon.
And Max Bird's, you know, talking about our lack of sort of central midfield options at the moment. I know Paul Warren has come out and sort of said that he's not really for sale. He's refusing to sign a new deal with them though. So whether we sort of up our interest, I'd sort of worry a bit about overpaying because we're in this position where we need a central midfielder and they don't want to sell. I'd almost rather we move on to other options and potentially force their hand if they do sort of come to the table. But as sort of a last point on the transfer window before we move on, I do worry a little bit that we're sitting in seventh position, and I'm sure in Ajun's mind he's just sitting there going, oh, look, you know, I just have to spend a couple of million here and we could go up this season. But the worry then for me is if we spend a lot of money on loanees or older guys like Orion Kent, where it's very much a let's go for it this season, and then we don't go up, we're almost jeopardizing our budget for next season, where I feel like we'd have a much stronger chance. So I'd want to go for it, but not go for it too much, if that makes sense. But it's a really difficult one because, I mean, it's a gamble for a reason, but it's a difficult one where you go, do you push that extra bit? Do you bring some of that budget forward from next season and really go for it this season, or is that too much of a risk?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one, especially with January, the January window being particularly bad for inflation of value, because it is very much like, oh, well, we need to cover this position now or whatever. So clubs know that they can just chuck an extra 10, 20, 30% value on a player's fee, and it's probably going to get paid without too much fuss. But I think you're right. You wouldn't want to go too crazy. I think if we can get some good options in without spending too much money, which probably is honestly, you know, a couple of mil for the three, is probably as much as I'd probably want to spend. Depending on whether they're, you know, transfers or loans, but you don't want to go crazy. I think you're right. This season is sort of one where we're really, as we've talked about, the intention or our hopes, most people's hopes for the season was consolidation, you know, build a really strong base so that in the coming years we can make a real solid push for promotion. And we're sort of unintentionally ahead of schedule, but you do certainly run the risk of sort of jeopardizing the whole plan if you push too much now, because of just what's going to happen with contracts and get to the end of season, and it's, you know, almost inevitable that someone's going to come in for Greaves and someone's going to come in for, I mean, who knows what happens with Delap and Morton. They're two big players that we have this season, which we may not have next season. So, you know, if you spend all your money now and you don't have the resources to bring in your replacement Delaps and Mortons for next season, then yeah, we're then going to be going backwards all of a sudden. So I think tempering the hype train that's running at the moment, where we are so close to those promotion spots, I think tempering that a little bit in the transfer window with just some smart, value for money, I'll call them, acquisitions, rather than forking out big money for, you know, the savior or whatever to come in and you know, carry us to the Premier League ahead of schedule. I'm sort of with you, I think, on that, the approach.
Yeah, and this point here is also a pretty important one in terms of the loan spots available. So I think you can have 5 loanees in a match day squad at any given time. We sort of talked before that it seems as if Vinagre is going back to Sporting. There's also the issue that Twine's getting interest from Bristol City, and whether we would have to buy him from Burnley to keep him at the club, or whether he'd then go to Bristol City. It does suggest there could be a few loan spots opening up. The other option, of course, you know, fingers crossed, would be if we did manage to buy someone like a Delap on a permanent in January to open up a loan spot. But, to that broader point around, you look at your Bensons and stuff like that, if they're going to cost money to come in, and you sort of look at it and go, well, you're spending a lot of money to bring in someone for half a season. It's starting to gamble a reasonable amount that you're going to manage to go up this season, rather than bringing in a, you know, by comparison, I'd rather spend the money on getting a Delap permanently, even if that doesn't actually improve the squad for this season. It means longer term, we've got a great asset in Delap. So look, it'll be an interesting window and a sort of a balancing act in terms of what we do in that sense.
Yeah. The only other thing I would say is, in terms of the financial side of it, is who we also, if whether we get fees for any players, you know, outgoings, because there's certainly, I think, you know, you look at Cynic, I think he's back in Turkey recovering from something anyway or something. So I think he, you know, probably on his way out, hopefully. I think we've already sort of talked about some others that are fringe players. I think we mentioned Ali as one who might, you know, could attract interest, and I think he is from MLS and potentially back in Turkey or something as well. Doherty, who's there, sort of, again, one of those fringe players who's not really doing a lot. And then potentially on wages, you free up a bit of space by sending out some of those kids, but not, you're not going to free up a lot of space by sending out, you know,
Vaughan and stuff like that, yeah.
Vaughan, Matty Jacob, those guys who are only on, you know, a pittance. But I guess, like, every pound is a pound, right? You send out a few young kids and you can maybe scrape together enough to get someone who's a little bit more experienced.
Yeah, no, it'll certainly be an interesting one. We'll do a quick player review then before we look at Birmingham. And it's Adama Traore this week, who been at the club just, you know, a year and a half or so, but has only really been playing for us for about a year because of that hamstring injury he suffered upon arrival. So he's made the 31 league appearances, which is, you know, it's an interesting number because you sort of think it feels like, obviously he's been at the club a whole lot longer than that, but has been reasonably limited in what he's been able to do for us, having scored 3 goals in that time. Free transfer from Hatayspor in 2022. I think, you know, he was, from memory, sort of that first name linked that summer, even before Seri and all those guys, and Tufan, even before those guys, he was sort of pretty much like that first, here's a, you know, we're making this signing from Turkey, you know, new era, this is the sort of player we're looking at. I remember looking at his stats at the time and thinking he didn't strike me as you know, someone who's going to light up the championship. And fair play to him. When he did actually get fit last season and get into the team, he looked really good. And he still has looked good at times this season. But, you know, just talking then about freeing up wages, freeing up, you know, potential transfer fees from selling players, I don't think you're going to get too much if you did sell Traore, given his age. But certainly in terms of wages, he's the sort of player I look at where I go, he's probably not had the level of impact that you would hope for the wages that we're paying. Might not be in a rush to sell him this season, but he's probably one where if you've got interest for him in the summer, I could imagine the club potentially looking to let him go.
Yeah, I think it was a weird one because, yeah, I think the big thing was that when the name got dropped and everyone got very excited about a different Adama Traore, but
Melbourne Victory Adama Traore.
Yeah, right? there's a few of them going around. But yeah, and then sort of arrived, injured, spent a long time out. I think came back just before in about December or something last year, and so it was almost like, you know, a January signing before January. But seemed to go, yeah, look, I think took a couple of games to sort of get into it, but then, you know, had some really strong performances the back end of last season, and has shown his value in the squad, I think, overall. But, 3-30 for a winger/attacking midfield is, it's not great, but it's not terrible. Throw a few assists in there, I'm sure, as well. He's going okay, but you're right.
But I guess that's young. Yeah, where I go, he's going okay. But I look at, for example, a Lukilo, who I'm sure is on a much slower wage, but has a seemingly similar output. I mean, I know Lukilo hasn't scored yet, but I sort of look at them and go, if you're going to have an okay attacking player,
yeah,
I'd be happier having a Lukilo in the squad than a Traore.
Yeah, I certainly get that. I guess the counterpoint, or not the counterpoint, but the other point is you look at, say, you know, I guess you sort of ask players in similar positions, if you go, okay, well, he's not performing that well on the wing, and, you know, he's not really a winger, so that makes sense.
That's
fair. If we put him in his best position, you go, well, let's say attacking midfield is his best. When Twines played there, which they seem to be the ones, they're sort of battling it out for that sort of number 10 position that I think, you know, up until a month ago, you would say, well, it's a fairly even sort of a thing. There's not really a lot of output from either of them, but I think recently you would say Twine is certainly showing a lot more value in that position. He's on loan, but he's a lot younger and has now more goals in a lot less appearances. Because what's he got? He's something like that. So that's certainly better than 3-30, but it's, you know, one every five games instead of one every 10. So, I think, you know, maybe that's sort of one where you go, well, let's, you know, if you can convince him, but you get rid of Traore, free up those wages, throw him at Twine, try and convince him. Try and convince Burnley to sign him up. But yeah, I think he's been, I guess that's the thing. He's been okay. Some really good moments, but just, I think, like, had a couple of cracking opportunities over the last couple of games and just couldn't quite get them. There was one, I think, at the back post.
It was at Bristol City, I think.
Yeah, I think.
To make it 3-3.
Could have just had to get it inside the post, and he taps it in and he couldn't. And then they had a real cracker that I think hit the crossbar, or just about hit the crossbar, against Blackburn, maybe. Sort of on the half turn and half volley, pinged it. And,
I think that was right before Jones's goal. I think that led to the corner that Jones scored from. Because I remember seeing that and going, it was a great swivel and shot. I'm like, if he'd done that against Bristol City, maybe he finds the back of the net. But yeah, he's one of those nearly players. And I guess the frustration, if he was 4 years younger, you go, he's a, you know, great player. He's building into a good squad player, but he's what, 31, I want to say. I'm going to look that up now.
Sure, something like that. But yeah,
he's definitely on the older side.
Yeah, I think he's a couple younger than Seri, I think, but. Because I think he was 29 28 or 29 when he signed.
Oh, you're right. He's only 28. I don't know why I thought he was 31. Oh, okay.
I thought he was 28 when he signed, which I guess probably he would have only been 27, wouldn't he?
Okay, so I take that back. He's not quite as old as I thought. Maybe it's the hamstring injury as well. You sort of see those as old man injuries. Yeah, you think he's a bit old.
I've had a couple of those. What are you trying to say?
So he does have a good sort of 4 or 5 years in him. So that I sort of take that back a bit. I was thinking, look, if he's about 26 or so, that's a good sort of level to be at. And he's only a couple of years older than that. So it's not too bad. Mm. But look, we'll see how he goes with Marley at the Cup of Nations. Hopefully he comes back fit and can have a real impact second half of the season.
Yeah, get a couple of goals there. Come back full of confidence. That's it.
Well, we'll talk Birmingham now in the FA Cup. And coming into this episode, I didn't think there was a whole lot to talk about with this one. And then news broke yesterday that Wayne Rooney's been sacked as Birmingham manager. We hardly knew him. It's only the 13 or 14 games I think he's had in charge with them. It's one of those ones where I sort of think they were idiots to hire him, but they're also idiots to sack him at this point in time. Mm-hmm. I think if you're going to hire a manager where you want them to completely change your style and then not give him a transfer window and then get fed up that he hasn't changed your style, I think you don't really know what you're doing. And to do it right before the transfer, or as the transfer window opens as well, you're like, you're going to spend like a week or so of the transfer window getting a new manager in anyway, unless they've got someone lined up. But it's just a bit chaotic down there at the moment.
Yeah, look, I'm glad that we don't have to do a podcast on Birmingham City because, like, I think it would be like when we had Under the Alums, we were just complaining about the regime all the time, because I don't remember why they sacked the previous manager, but they were fifth and now they're 20th and they've sacked the manager again. And you go, well, why were you getting rid of a manager when you're in fifth place anyway? I don't remember what the reason was. All I remember was, were we his first game in charge?
It was his first home game.
Yeah. It's very, it's just so weird. You're right. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. And I think it shows.
It does give me naivety, or just
a poor back of house setup that they're just making these impulsive decisions.
It was a little bit different, but maybe
I don't feel impulsive to them, but I guess you just go like, yeah, how else do you describe sacking a manager in fifth and then bringing someone in and sacking him after 13, where he hasn't had the opportunity to actually do anything with the squad? Like, it's different when you go, you know, we had Schotter.
I was just going
to sack him after half a season, but he was there, you know,
he had the window.
He was there. Had some say in bringing in Oscar, Tete, whoever,
Stinney, all those guys.
Yeah, all these players that came in, and some of those have gone on and been fine, you know, after, you know, his ineptness as a coach was shown, and since he was shown the door. So I think it'll hopefully gives a good opportunity to.
Well, I was going to say, is it going to put them into chaos, or is it going to sort of galvanize them to get a result?
I think the fact that it's the FA Cup, I think it's not going to be important. It's not going to matter to them at all. I think that in a sense that it's going to, you know, they are not going to be thinking the FA Cup as an important fixture for them. And it's not one that I think they're really going to be rallying to win, because they're currently their real priority is going to be staving off relegation, because they've somehow gone from top six to edge of the relegation places. And I think that's the key for what should be their priority and their preference is going, this is going to be a game where, you know, I think they'll throw out a reasonably strong side. It'll be whoever their interim managers, you know, goes, well, this, we'll see how you go, you know, get a bit of a feel for what he wants for them. But I think for them, it's kind of going to be more of and this is obviously speculation, but more of a training game, preparing them for the week after when they've got a league game where they, you know, are going to desperately need 3 points. I think it's a luxury they can't really afford at the moment, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. The interesting angle I saw pointed out from our perspective in terms of motivation to win this game is when you look at our league fixtures after the FA Cup, we've got Norwich, Sunderland and Southampton as our next three. Now, the fourth round of the FA Cup, I think, would mean that that Southampton game would get rearranged and played at a later date. So I saw the argument made that, well, it's almost the bigger incentive in winning this game is delaying that game. You get your Morton back from suspension. You get, potentially, if it's delayed far enough into the future, you get your Seri and your Traore back as well. Philogene as well. Great point. So there's almost more incentive from a league perspective to win the game, which I found quite funny. But I'd still expect, I'd see, you know, quite a heavily rotated City side. Dalat getting the rest against Chef Wednesday, maybe he comes on as a late sub in this game. Yeah. Connolly as well. So it'd be a really interesting one to actually see how we line up and who we'd have as a forward, because I'd imagine, presumably, Billy Sharp could well start for this one just to give him a full run out. I don't know.
Yeah, not sure. It's interesting, although that is a good point. Billy Sharp is now available for selection, so he'll certainly play a part. Be interesting. I wouldn't actually be surprised to see. Yeah, I think the indication with the few, you know, early rotations in the game, once it was sort of out of reach, sort of indicates that, you know, we've obviously had a pretty busy period with four games in, I think it's only like 10 days or something crazy. So, you know, some rotation, but I don't necessarily think it's rotation and, you know, resting up for this game. But I think a lot of those players will still play a part.
Maybe Ali starts up top, actually.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, a forward line that maybe looks like Billy Sharp, you know, probably Lukilo, because he probably needs more minutes. Maybe, you know, Ali, maybe even like young, was it Matty Jacob or, you know, one of those other young forwards that we have.
Yeah, what's his name? Is it Sandat or something?
Harry Sandat.
No, he's gone on loan to Southend, I think. But yeah, maybe one of the younger guys.
Yeah.
I think Jim Sims is back as well. Is it?
Yeah. Possibly, you know, Andy Smith getting a start. Him and McLaughlin, maybe. I'm not sure. I think we'll like, it's weird because I just said, like, you know, we said, well, they're not really good things. So I think it'll be good for us. But I reckon there'll be a bit of rotation, but I still think we'll put out a reasonably strong side. I don't think we'll just be putting, because I think this is the first time we'll get a full week after it. So, I think there'll be enough. They'll do their assessments, check their loadings and all that sort of nonsense and see. But I reckon, you know, see Doherty from the start.
Call this the shop window game.
Yeah, just about.
Put a few players in. Yeah.
Don't know. Maybe Christie starts. I mean, if he starts, can we start him higher? Can we just start him as a winger or something? Because he seems to go better up there. Let him play 45, get tired, and then we'll bring on someone, bring Dalap on to play the second half or something.
Yeah, but it'll be an interesting. I think cheap tickets as well for this one, so hopefully means a pretty decent crowd at the MKM. But I sort of say this every year with the FA Cup. I'm actually always a big fan of trying to progress in the FA Cup. Rossini obviously started in an FA Cup final for us, so has some pretty decent pedigree in the competition for City. So I think we had Fulham this time last year, so it wasn't as much of a chance to progress. But, you know, you never know. You win this one, you get a trip to Arsenal or Man City or someone like that. It's a good day out for the supporters. It gives the players a good chance to get a bit of exposure against a Premier League team. I don't necessarily see the downside. I get the argument around fixture congestion and stuff, but to your point, you know, we've got a week off after this game to the next game, and I think we're at the other side of the Christmas period now, so it's a bit less congestion in that sense. So I don't think there's as much issue in that sense, and you can rotate as well anyway. So I'm always a fan of staying in the competition. And you know, like we said, I back us to win it. I think even with Rooney gone, I think Birmingham's focus is elsewhere. They're in a bit of turmoil, and I think we can get the win in this one.
Yeah, I think we'll get a win as well. And I think the other benefit of having cup fixtures is that rotation, is that ability to allow some of those fringe players to get some, you know, good minutes. It might, you know, Vaughan is one as well, who I didn't mention.
Yeah.
is a good opportunity for him to start and try and show what he's worth. So, yeah, I think we'll something like a 2-1 or something, or a 1-0. Like, I don't think there's going to be heaps in it. I think it'll be a bit scrappy and a bit messy because I don't think it'll be our top 11, but I can see us getting the job done.
And thankfully here in Australia, we've got all the games on Paramount Plus, so you can watch this one at, what is it, 2 a.m., I suspect it probably is. So we'll see how we go in that one. But thanks for joining me for this one, Dan.
That's all right, anytime.
Seems and to be thanks every week everyone.
At the moment.
Yeah, that's it. It's the holiday period, so trying to get the teachers on while I can. I think we'll try and get Logan on next week once he's got his laptop back up and running. But look, thanks everyone for listening in as well. It's actually ended up being quite a long one. But we'll be back next week. We just got the FA Cup next week to chat about, so it'll be a much shorter one with maybe hopefully a bit of transfer news as well. So see how that all goes. But until next time, come on, City. You've been listening to the official Hull City Australia podcast, The Tigers Down Under. For more discussion, join us on Facebook at the Hull City AFC Australia Facebook group, or follow us on Twitter at Hull City AFC Oz. The music was created by Amber and Black. All the city's on fire, with a burning desire. Tigers are roaring, a destiny's calling, cause now is the time. Yeah, the city's on fire, we're going higher and higher. There's no turning back, cause you're out.